Blog Talk Radio.
This pot smells delicious, and it's the base for our ultimate beef stew.
Beef stew.
Now, we're talking about beef stew.
Beef stew.
Fry this beef stew. Fry this beef stew.
Yes, sirree, Bob. Yes, sirree, Bob. You know it's your man in the building. Your man, Beef Big Stew, in the building. It's going down on a Monday. You know, on a Monday, get back to work Monday. I call this a grind Monday because, you know, we always got to grind on a Monday. Monday is when you get back to work and you do your thing. We was supposed to have a special guest in the place with us today. We were supposed to have Mr. John M. Phillips. He basically called me, let me know he's running real late. He's caught up in a conference or something like that. But you know how we do it. We keep it rocking anyway. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, I just wanted to let y'all know next week it's going to be a lot of new changes on Beef Stew Radio. We will be having three. We will be up and running for a straight 3 hours of airtime every day, 7 days a week. You know, you're going to see a couple of different shows back to back with each other. You know what I'm saying? Some shows will be an hour and a half, some shows will be 2 hours, some shows will be an hour. And you're going to see us just running back to back, and we're going to just have different entertainment for you all day, every day. And that's what we do. Once again, you know, everybody's rocking and everybody's riling over the Giants. You know, the Giants done it. I'm very proud of the Giants. I was at a Taste of Hip Hop's cooking party the other night. It was really great, man. I mean, this dude, you know, he cooked so much food, he didn't even get a chance to even come and sit down with us or even watch the game. He actually didn't see none of the game. First he came out with his little hors d'oeuvres, which was, you know, like beef mixed with some Monterey Jack cheese and or turkey or chicken breast, white chicken meat breast, and you know, it was really good. He looked a real nice, presentation was nice, and he came out with that first and gave us all Coronas and got us nice with the Coronas. So now we're sitting there with the onion dip and the crackers and everything, and now we're hungry because we're men, you know. We're sitting there, it's the second quarter. Then he blows our mind. He comes out with the super, 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 super hot buffalo wings. He throws them on the plate. We eat them, knock them down, barely got to drink some water because your breath is going crazy. You know how it is like that? Well, that's how it was going down with it. And I can't lie, it was a great day. Then we popped open the bottle and had the rest of the dinner, the shrimp fried rice, you know, the homemade shrimp fried rice with the big, giant shrimps, you know what I'm saying, inside the rice, you know what I'm saying, the baller style. And we popped a couple of bottles of champagne and a couple of bottles of sparkling red Moscato, and us and the Taste of Hip Hop, you know, the Beef Stew Radio family and the Taste of Hip Hop crew, we just on the set just blowing it down and having a fun time at the Super Bowl. Homeboys just chilling with homeboys. It was a great day. And the Giants won, so that made it a plus. It was a big plus because Russell, Drinks on Russ, was the only out of like 10 guys, was the only guy that was a New England Patriot fan out of Harlem. So you know he got the business that night. You know what I'm saying? He got the business. Was watching the finale about Love and Hip Hop. They had the little thing on there about when, you know, the lady Mona interviews everybody. And it seems to be everybody does, you know, a lot of the cast of Love and Hip Hop, and, you know, seem to be upset with the producers and the way they portrayed them and the way they did the whole situation with them. Well, that's how it be. You know, when you get on reality TV, man, they try to take your life and dog your life out. They, you know, they tell you, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And your idea will be you're going in there to, you know, to portray your life. And even if you're not known, like if you some of the unknown people, it's different because you're going in there to make a name for yourself. But when you're somebody like, you know, Jim Jones or Jewel Santana, it's a little different because you don't want people too much in your private life like that, you know, and you don't want people too much in your business like that. So, you know, that's how that goes. You know what I'm saying? Fab, you know, you see, you know, because brothers, you know, whatever is going on in the brother life, you know, when you're a star, you don't want everybody in your life. That's what happens, and that's how it goes. The Capper should be here soon today in the show. He's actually doing a lot of things, too, because, like I told you, we are doing numerous things. We're getting mad busy in the building, you know what I'm saying? We got mad things going on. Matter of fact, the Capper's in the building right now.
Yes, sir.
What's going on, brother?
I'm good. What's up, man?
Now, you know, our guest, Mr. MP, he won't be in here today with us. So I guess we're just going to have to wing it for an hour, me and you, man. You know, I brought some music. Huh?
What happened to the brother?
You know, I was caught up on the plane or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's
crazy
brother, things that happening, man. Let me tell you why I was late, man.
Go ahead.
I got attacked by an Ecuadorian prostitute with a huge head. Yeah, this woman's head was enormous, and she just attacked me out of nowhere.
You know what I want to ask you? Why do women with big heads attract to you?
I don't know. This woman had, yo, I'm telling you, I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, but this woman's head was huge too, man. Huge. She looked like a Pez dispenser with lipstick.
Wow. So, I mean, how did you get away from her? What did you do?
Nah, the cops came eventually, but she jumped on me, man, and she was saying something in Spanish I didn't really understand.
Well,
you know,
all right.
I
think it's that. Where did it start from?
I'm minding my own business. I'm walking down the street, and I just hear these feet. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what's going on, you know what I'm saying? So I turn, I keep walking, and then I hear it again. So I turn around like, you know, I don't know what's going on, so I'm ready for anything. So from a distance, it looked like a dude. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the closer, matter of fact, you ever play NBA Jam back in the days?
Yeah.
Remember the characters? When it was the 2-on-2 NBA Jam, the character had the real big head?
Yeah.
That's how she looked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man, she run up on me like, you know, what happened? What happened? What happened, puppy? What happened? And I'm like, what do you mean, what happened? What happened? What happened? And she just jumped on me, dog.
You sure you didn't meet her somewhere else before? Because it sounded like, you know, she was saying what happened, like you were supposed to do something and you didn't do it.
Nah, man. Only big head chick that ever had a shot was from Austria. That's it. Maybe she found out that, you know, that I had a thing for another woman with a large cranium and decided she'd take a shot. I don't know. Maybe she's offended when I wasn't.
Other than a large cranium, did she look all right?
No. See, I'm too much makeup, man.
Wow.
I couldn't tell. You know what I'm saying? Like, and you know how some girls, that's the thing about with fashion and things like that. Like, some women don't know how to apply makeup. I don't know if she applied it drunk because she smiled, she had a little Corona on her breath. But, yo, it looked like she just took blush. Not even that. It looked like she, like, drew a face on the ground or something and just slammed her face into the makeup and then came up with makeup on her face or something. I don't know, man.
Now, let me ask you, bro. Are we ready to, like, you know, introduce to the world what you're going to be doing, man?
Not yet, man.
Oh, my
soon,
God.
Soon, man, soon. I got to put some more things together, man.
This is a masterpiece in the works.
Now, don't overhype it. I think I'm going to name it the Kappa Experiment, man. It's an experiment.
The Kappa Experiment. And you don't,
yeah.
You know, can we tell them anything to expect? Or what, you know, you don't want to leak.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we might as well go there. We'll put it like this. Quite similar to the story I just told. It's basically, man, I think I was chosen to witness crazy things in my life. And I've seen a lot of crazy things, and I've experienced a lot of crazy. And I know everybody has stories, but I think I've experienced too many things to not tell, to not share it with the world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So things that happen, man. Like even how I got out of like sticky situations back in the days was like the silliest ways. But it was like damn near a cartoon. We'd be like, how did he get out of that?
I actually I know a lot of things, so, and I know it's going to be real interesting, so, you know, that's why I just can't wait for it to be on the air. But, you know, I want to take you into the politics this show a little bit, man. You know, we haven't really discussed politics, and, you know, Monday is our talk night anyway, so I guess me and you are going to sit here and build a little bit. But the politics of the things, Cap, you know, I want to talk about these Republicans, man, and, you know, and what they're doing, and, you know, what you feel about what's going on, you know. Do you feel that they have a candidate that can go against, you know, Barack Obama legitimately without stealing it, like, you know, the Bush candidacy was done?
I don't think they do. But I think what they're doing is, you know, what they always do, which is pretty smart, is the rich plays the middle against the poor. And that's how they get there. That's how they start getting. That's how they convince people that their way is right. I have my thoughts about just the electoral process anyway, because it's weird that we all know it's electoral college that decides, but we all somehow think that we're voting. I don't know if maybe they do that so that we can. You know, maybe it's a barometer. Maybe they go, well, look, we'll take the votes and see who wants. What face do they want to lead them? But when it comes down to it, we don't really make that decision anyway. But, and I'm kind of going off of the topic a little bit, but, you know, I think that's pretty much what they're going to do. Is like they anger the middle class. They make the middle class think that Barack's policies are jerking them, when in a lot of cases it's helping them. But they can't see it because they're fooled into thinking that they're rich because they're comparing themselves to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
So they think they're above them somehow when they're not far out of the boat. You know what I'm saying? Some of them are like two paychecks away from heading to public service.
Do you ever feel that the people would like ever realize that the reason why we got into the situation that we are now, it seems like, you know, the Republicans never take credit. Like, it was the Republican administration that got us here right now. The Republicans and the rich and the wealthy and the Wall Street brokers. It was these guys who got us here. You know?
Yeah, but I think what it is, though, America has short memory. Very, very short-term memory. You know what I'm saying? Give Bush a couple of more years. If he stick his head out, people are going to love him to death. Very short memories. It's like, and also they don't see the realistic view of no president is really running things. The president gets in there, he gets to do a couple of things that he wants to do, but for the most part, he's following the guidelines set by whoever is behind the throne. And, you know, I have my suspicions and thoughts and some things I've read as to who's really running the America.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're just a face. So it's like, I think KRS said it very interestingly when he was like, you know, the president is like the Burger King manager. It's like when you're not happy with your food, they send you to the manager, but the manager don't own the place.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Well, so. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, that's a good concept, you know, definitely that. Do you feel, you know, Barack has done enough that he will win, you know, do you think he could win again strongly? I mean, do you think him, but the Bin Laden, because he's kind of, they try to ask you what he have done, but he got some pluses of what he's done.
Yeah, but America's very willing to be passive. It's like, they really feel like, okay, Bin Laden was the target, Bush got tons of praise for getting Saddam Hussein. Everybody forgot about Bin Laden. And then when this guy gets Bin Laden, or if he did, you know, I don't even know. It's like, just think about how back then when everything went down, Bin Laden and their family, when no one else could fly, they were able to, you know, fly out of America. And then we hear that they killed him and respectfully dumped him in the water because that's some Muslim thing, which I never really heard of. So I don't know. They could be wagging the dog. Did, you know, Did they really get Bin Laden? Like, who knows? You know what I'm saying? But if it is true, yeah, he should be credited. You know, with that, he should be credited with ending the war, like he said. It's just that, again, America has ADHD. Very, very short-term memory, but very anxious at the same time. He came in and said he's going to end the war. He didn't end the war in 10 minutes. So now it's like, well, whenever you ended it within your four-year term, but it don't matter because you didn't end it in the first 30 days. So we got bored with that idea of you ending the war. Now we don't care. You ended it, so what? You know what I'm saying? That's how it seems to me.
Well, he's bringing the troops home, you know. What do you feel about that? I mean, now they're saying now, you know, first of all, the whole point of bringing the troops home, our troops are dead too long. Now he's bringing the troops home. Now the army's not strong enough. I think the troops myself have been fighting long enough. You know, I think it's time for them to be home with their family and let the, and, you know, not to be funny or nothing, but let that country, you know, develop its own system with its own people. Because if we have to be there forever, then we, you know, there's a lot of young lives that have been lost in this war. These guys that get killed in the war, they don't be, you know, older dudes, man. They be 21, 19, 20. You lost a lot of young Americans due to some, you know, war that we've been going on, that we've been in.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, man. I mean, I myself, you know, of course, you know, the ideal world would be that there would be no war, but, you know, that's not how you know, this planet works. But, yeah, I think you know, it's good that he's pulling them out of there. But, you know, it's all about control, man. It's so many levels, man. It's like, you know, I dig the fact that we had our first African-American president. You know, I take nothing from that man, you know, and I think he took the presidential appearance to another level besides just being an African-American. I mean, what other presidents were going on, you know, television shows like on a regular basis? You know what I'm saying? And like just kind of being that couple that feel like, you know, you could sit and really have dinner with them and have a nice conversation. You wouldn't feel that way about any other president. At least I didn't. You know, and I don't think it's just because he's black. I just think it's, there's something about them, you know what I'm saying, that make
you feel comfortable. Well, the next two Republican candidates, they both got multi-wives. Even Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney. Now, these guys are guys with. Now, this is a big contradiction of America itself, because America always states that, you know, the president is supposed to be a married man with a stable family and a state. Because, you know, this is what's always been said. A man with a real stable home can run a business. You know, if your home ain't right, then, you know, your life ain't right. You know, that's a pure fact, you know, to everything. Your home life has to be right for you to be successful, you know?
Yeah.
And we just witnessed that with, I hate to say it sadly, with the now rest in peace Don Cornelius. It seemed like things wasn't, you know, right for him at home. You know, different stories come out now. One story was the pain, another story was divorce. And that just shows you home life wasn't right, you know? And it could get to a person. So now we got two presidential candidates. Both of them who has situations where they don't have one wife. They have two or three wives.
Yeah, they're doing their thing. They're doing like some of the other presidents. They're just not hiding it.
I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, yeah. But see, is that saying too much that, like, what is America conking down to too much new things? Like, you know, gay marriage was one, and now you got a president, you know, it was used to be unheard of that a guy would have two wives or anything, or be able to say either one of my wives would make a great first lady. You know, it used to be unheard of to say things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a different time, man. I mean, especially with this, you know, super wave.
I think
if
Barack would have said it, would have been different times.
If Barack would have said that, he wouldn't. He would have. His popularity would have tanked, because he's already on edge just for being black. And we gotta be real. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know sometimes, a lot of times, people don't like to talk about you know, race and culture, you know. But let's be real, man. I mean, at least in my own experience, you know, we experience racism on a daily basis, but it has not been so blatant to me since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it got a lot to do with this man being in office. It's like they can't, the people who do have a problem with it can't hold their tongue. So it, first it came out, you know, subliminal, then it started getting blatant, you know, and now they're acting out, you know what I'm saying? It's just.
Now in the Bronx, it seems to be getting up, because if you look in the Bronx, two kids, young kids, got really beat up by the, you know, one kid got killed, you know, in his own home for what they said was less than a dime bag of marijuana when it was all put together. And the cops chased him in his house and shot him. And another kid was beaten, you know, beaten badly, that you've seen on film, beaten Rodney King style.
Huh?
And
yeah,
I mean, and the Bronx is really known to have deep racism. You know, I know a lot of cats that drive cars, and they'll tell you, yo, when I be driving my car, if you got a nice car in the Bronx, you know, you taking a real chance of getting harassed by the cops. You know, like dudes live in Manhattan and might have friends in the Bronx and scared to drive to the Bronx because the police that's up there is really racist, you know?
Oh, yeah. Then, Queens and Queens, parts of Queens.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, hey, yo, let's see if anybody wants to chime in on our general random topics that we're doing right now. You know, you guys can call 914-338-1685 and talk with us. I mean, this is open forum tonight. You know, our guest got he was unable to make it. He said something about his flight. So, you know, the forum's open. If anyone want to call in, chime in on anything we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, President Barack Obama. You know, will he get reelected or anything, man? If you got attacked by a Ecuadorian hooker with a big head of puff, call in and share, you know?
And also, you know, let's talk about Tom Brady's wife. She's made a serious comment in the news today, you know. So throw something out there, you know. They asked her, you know, what happened, what she thinks happened with in the game, and she said a little remark like this, Cap. She said, oh, my husband, he could throw the ball, but he can't catch the ball and throw the ball at the same time. So that's kind of deep. That's saying a lot about his crew, don't you think?
So his crew didn't do nothing, basically, is what she said.
Basically, you know, I mean, that's hard to say. You know, I used to be a quarterback, and when I was younger, and you know, that could have your guys not actually protecting you. A statement like that, you could be going through something, getting sacked and tackled because your boys got offended for what your lady said.
Yeah, man, leave that hole open, tear your shoulder up.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, he threw an interception when they didn't need an interception thrown, you know. So that's probably what the announcer was talking about, you know. And then, you know, he's known to, you know, when defensives are a little strong and aggressive, you know, he's not really the fighting type. You know, he wants to get hit.
Yeah.
He's not going to get hit. But, yeah, I mean, we got, to, like you said today, sometimes we have the random topics, man. And another random topic that people been asking me, man, is about our school system. I mean, they really say the school system sucks.
Yeah, I mean, going through the school system, it sucked then, so I can't imagine it getting.
Now it's like, you know, I mean, it's kids going to school with 9mm, and they got gun. You know, we didn't go to school with metal detectors, though.
Huh?
I mean, I didn't. My school was wild. You know, it was a lot of knuckle up. I actually went to Alfred E. Smith when it was in the Bronx, and when it was all boys, actually. But it still didn't have metal detectors.
Yeah.
I mean, we had group gangs like Zulu Nation and, you know, all the gangs that was running through the 80s and, you know, that might, you know, back then you go on the 125th Street and the train station, and, you know, that's where you catch from the, where the 5 train switches to the 6 train, and that's where a lot of drama used to happen at. And it used to be, you know, that's where all the kids met at in high school back then. So, but now it's a different story, man. These kids is like, they're doing just run by shootings, just shooting in the crowd and killing each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a lot wilder now.
A lot wilder. And they not even, and you know, one thing I talk to a lot of the hustlers out there in Harlem, you know, and I kick it with a lot of the hustlers, you know, just being in my neighborhood and, you know, the neighborhood I grew up in. And a lot of the hustlers say that they're not making no money. These kids are not, they're not like the back in the days when it was the original 50 Cents and the Alpos and the Rich Porters and the B.O.s and the, you know, the dudes from the, and the Fat Cat Nicholas. These guys was ruthless, but these guys made a lot of money. These cats now are not making a dime and just killing each other. And you can't even say it's over colors. It's just like hip-hop got the game so mentally messed up right now, man.
Yeah. I think when art imitates life, imitating art, imitating life, imitating art, imitating life, this is what you end up with.
Now, this is the thing. Let's name some rappers who we, and let's keep it real. And I want you to keep it really real with me on this, because I know you a heavy-duty critic. Name some rappers who need to shape their shit up, man. That you
who need what?
Real talk. Some rappers who you probably feel need to shape their shit up, they image wise, you know.
Shape it up? What do you mean by shape it up?
You know, like, you know, get their shit. You know, I don't know how to say it. Like, rappers who need to help bring real rap back to the game. You know, talent wise, all around. Whether, you know, they just so corny, where and they just a selling mode, or, you know.
Yeah, but
disturbing hip hop.
I don't think there's. As far as the commercial realm, I don't know, man. I think it's weird to me. It's weird to me. Like, I'm not really a fan of a lot of it, but I understand why it's being done. You know what I'm saying? Because right now, even the big artists are having trouble pushing units, you know, ever since now. All you got to do is go and download your album that you like for free. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's really a choice. It's really, really in the consumer's hands now. It's up to the consumer to say, okay, I'm going to support you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't feel there's no artists out there preserving the true hip-hop but still selling units?
It's preserving the true hip-hop but still selling units? Let me see.
Yeah.
Who could I say? Well, I mean, I think Jay-Z is being true to who he is. You know, a lot of people may disagree, but, you know, what I say about him is that he's showing growth. Like, his progression sounds natural. It doesn't sound forced. It's not like he sat down and said, okay, now what could I do to make kids like what I'm saying? Like, he didn't do it that way. He's being who he is. You know what I'm saying? So I say him. I don't know who else. Like I listen.
Oh, so you think L might just sit down and try to make something that's hot for what's out?
Who, LL?
Yeah.
Where you dig him up from?
No, I'm just asking because LL is you mentioned Jay-Z. So, and now I'm thinking, well, LL be always feeling like, you know, a lot of people say LL is somebody who be keeping it true hip-hop and been around for a long time.
I don't agree.
And that's why I want you to say it, I don't know, and I want you to tell me why you don't agree.
I don't agree. I think what LL did, LL was like, what he would do, and other artists do this, don't get me wrong, but what he would do when it was time for him to do a new project, he would get, you know, the cats of the younger, I won't even say generation, but of the next sound, he would get them around him. And he would vibe off of their style, and then he would use it. You know, that's why he sounds so different when each project would come out, is because he would stay cutting edge by getting whatever the newest stuff that was happening. He would get people who were good at that around him. You know, where he kind of failed was he picked a too obvious person to vibe to, and that was 50 Cent. And you could tell, it's like, okay, you sound just like 50 Cent now. But before, the other artists were unknown, so it just sounded like it was LL coming out with something. But he really vibed off of some other people. You know? I know that because my boy, Thurston Howell, a lot of y'all might know that dude, Thurston Howell III, LL was trying to get him down with Camp Cool J back in the days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Thurston, you know, his mode forward, that didn't really fit in his plan. And, you know,
whatever happened to LL's label?
Whatever happened to LL?
Well, he had an album out not too recently.
Yeah, that was the one with 50 Cent, the one that 50
yeah.
Cent did. But this is what I'm saying. No artists were ever going to come out on that thing because that whole thing was designed for him to vibe off of them so that he could come out. You know, he basically was leeching off of their energy so that he could come out with something new. You know, I think, unfortunately, when you look at Cash Money, I think people like, and it's unfair, because people like J. Mills and Corey Guns are nice, but I don't think they'll ever get an album. Even
so
though
you think that's what Lil Wayne and them is doing at Cash Money, is vibing off of J. Mills and Corey
Guns.
Hell
yeah. Vibing, and they're writing for them. I know they're helping them write. I know. They're helping Drake. They're helping Nicki Minaj. They're helping Wayne.
Now, I'm going to ask you this. This deep that you said that, because there's a lot to be said. There's a lot to be said about, you know, there's a lot of rumors going on in the industry that a lot of South rappers are hiring New York rappers to write for them. Or signing new rappers, like, you know, they got their name out there. They'll sign a New York rapper. He comes out there, stays with them, write a bunch of songs, and, you know, and then does it, the songs come out under the rapper that he signed to name instead of his own.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the artist is aware that that's what's going to happen, I don't think dudes have a problem with ghostwriting. I think J. Mills is eating. I don't think he's not eating in that crew, but for everyone who felt, because actually I know his manager. We went to the same barbershop for years. Shout out to Joe, Pro Styles Barbershop. But it when he first signed, because he signed with them years ago, it was about, you know, okay, Jay is gonna be on now. He's gonna come out. But I think if Jay Mills is aware that he's coming in as a writer, I don't think it's a problem because he could eat. You know what I'm saying? He might not be able to come out with an album. His New York style might be too New York for him to become a competitive artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he don't have a pop sound. And let's be real, you need that, especially since the industry is struggling. You need to get as many people as you can to buy it because everybody's downloading your stuff for free. So if you get people who don't mind putting that money up, or who don't know how to steal it, even though that's kind of impossible. I think everybody knows how to steal music now. But you know, the more people that you got that listen to your music, the more likely you're going to drive some sales. So it's hard to be like a street level artist now and really push units. It was hard back then, so now it's worse.
Now, to take you up with hip hop, cuz, you know, I want to, you know, cuz I got you now, you know what I'm saying? I always wanted to have these deep, you know, this guy gave me and you the opportunity to let the world know how me and you talk on a regular basis, you know, deep stuff we be getting into. But you know, I want to talk about Don Cornelius, cuz.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to, you know, I want you to tell me what would make a man other than pain. Well, I mean, what's your perception? Do you think it's true the pain side, or is it true that his wife was leaving him and he couldn't take it? And
I don't know, man. That whole thing just sounds real weird to me. It's like you got a person who was built on grinding. I mean, he always pushed to overcome the toughest of situations. Like, how could you successfully be a black show that plays black music in a country where they weren't trying to pay attention or acknowledge that this sound, this style even existed?
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to do this for years and successfully keep going, and then for any, I don't see what turmoil could do that. But again, you know, I mean, I wasn't in the brother's circumference. I don't know how he felt as a person outside of his achievements in Soul Train. You know,
mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe he felt like that was a success, and anything in his life that failed, maybe it hurt him a lot more since he achieved so much, you know. But it still just sounds weird. I don't even like to acknowledge the fact that that's what they're alleging. You know?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little upset about it myself, you know. But, you know, we do talk about it because, you know, we do compelling talk. And, you know, I just even if somebody out there want to call in, like Kappa said, and, you know, and want to speak their mind about it, you know, 914-338-1685, you welcome to, because, you know, I think, you know, and the shameful part, man, is like so many of our black people in the black music that come from the, you know, the hard struggle days of being in the music, you know, died by suicide, you know, when you look at it. Died by guns, you know, like, it's, you know what I'm saying? You know, what is it in a black community that suicide is something that we kind of felt for a long time that erases the problem?
Has there been a high rate of suicide in the black community?
I mean, not in VC. I'm talking about in the music business. When you look at, like, people in the music business that came from the Motown era and those eras, that time,
mm-hmm.
A lot of them from then and to now have killed themselves, a few, you know, died through suicide.
Mm.
And depression.
I didn't know that.
You know?
That's news to me, man. It's like, I think usually in the black community with all the other adversity to jump over, it's like there's always someone in line ready to take you down. You ain't got to.
And I'm not talking overall. I'm just talking about a lot of those guys that, if you're looking at some of the greats, one of the Temptations committed suicide. You know, if you look at some of the great people committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that came from those.
That pressure. It's that pressure. You know, once you have a certain degree of success, it's like, how do you digress from that? How do you go backwards? And some people can't handle that. It's like, yo, I came from nothing. I made myself something. You know, I can't handle going backwards, you know? And maybe that's why they're doing it.
I would think Don Cornelius, like, you know, he should realize, man, he, you know, he's a landmark. Like, you know, all your life, if you Don Cornelius, you have to know that you're a historian. You history. You have to know, like, when your time coming, you know, you mess around and get a street. There's certain people out here right now, like Barack Obama. He knows when he died, there's going to be a street named after him somewhere.
There was already a school named after him in Long Island, and probably more.
Probably more, you know, but there's going to be avenues, and, you know, they're going to push to put it, you know, on a dollar bill, because he's definitely a candidate. He's the first black president, so African-American president, so he could be on a bill now. You know?
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't have
on
a Latino run for president this year, like real hard.
What bill would Barack be on?
It got to be bling bling bill because you black. A new bill. Be the hardest bill to get. No black person to get that bill. Be like a $4,000 bill.
They can get like a $101.36 bill.
Lucky they don't have food stamps. Remember the food stamp change? Because they would have put his face on the food stamp. They would love to do it. Remember the little food stamp change back in the days? And then they had a change, you know, the little plastic change.
It was like Monopoly money, man.
Look, that used to be embarrassing. You go in there, and you know, when I was little, I used to, you know, because some stores, and when they ain't had a change, if you get a nice guy in the store, he give you the real change back, you know? Then it was those poppies that were suckers. They have a bunch of that fake change in the, under the drawer. They'll pull, you see them pull that drawer up, you're like, oh, this nigga got the fake change, man.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, man. My grandmama, she sent me this story when I was a kid, man, like 10, 11 years old, a couple of times. And that's that joint, man. You go in that store, go buy some bread or something, and you be right at the front of the line, and you see somebody you know, next thing you know, now you're stalling for time. You go back down the aisles.
You're going to
buy something else.
Yeah, yo, I got a crazy story with a food stamp. A famous boxer robbed me in East Harlem when I was like about 11, 12 years old. And they was older than me, but they was about my height, you know, because they was short. And they was a famous boxer, man, robbed me for a food stamp back when he was running with a gang in my neighborhood called the Renegades of Harlem and all that. But I ain't going to lie, he looked out for me when he became a champion. I mentioned it to him when he was a champion, you know, and I seen him in the neighborhood. He was always the type of dude that come back in East Harlem and be dancing around. You know, he's a real flashy guy. He'd be dancing around, and he was giving out money. And I said, yo, man, when I was a little dude, you robbed me for $5 a food stamp. Yo, homeboy gave me like $200, man. I never forget that, man.
That's
deep.
Crazy.
Make you wonder who it was, too, right?
He was talking.
Huh?
My bad. I was peeking out the window to make sure that Ecuadorian big-head hooker was
there. Yeah, I know. I see you over there looking a little scared over there. Have me wondering who's coming in. But like I was telling you, you know, make you wonder who was that professional boxer who robbed me back then.
Yeah, man. Who was it?
Well, I'm going to give you a hint. He was real flashy, and he came out of East Harlem. He's an ex-gang member.
Man, that's vague, man. How many
like, that could be
flashy
anybody that
gang
boxed out of
came
East Harlem out of the night.
Yeah, you named East Harlem.
Well, I'm saying he was a well-known boxer. I'm going to give it to you. He was the, you know, most well-known as boxer that came out of my neighborhood in East Harlem. Ain't nobody else came out of this neighborhood as well-known as him. As boxing, he went to the top.
Camacho?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Macho, man. But I'm going to lie, I told him that. I said, yo, man, you robbed me for $5 when I was a little dude. Son pulled out a wop, hit me with $200, and it was like a bum dude from the, you know, in the hood, and he probably knew homeboy, like, you know, homeboy was like a dope fiend or whatever, looked like he was messed up, but, you know, you could tell that Camacho knew him when he was younger. He just gave homeboy the whole, like, I mean, I don't know, it had to be about maybe about $2,000, another, he just let homeboy keep the rest of the knot, like, keep that. Jumped in the Ferrari at the time, they was, at the time in the hood, they were screaming that, you know, that what that, you know, he was, every time he won a fight, Sports Illustrated was buying him a new Ferrari or something like that. So he was coming back in the hood with mad Ferraris. He'd be out there like on 111th Street or over there in Jefferson Projects, and he'd be over there, you know, just dancing around. Cap just dancing around, had his little son there, and he'd be just dancing, but he used to be showing mad love, man, to the hood. That used to be deep. But he robbed me, man. He robbed me, man. I'll never forget it. He said, Shorty, give me that food stamp. I was like, damn, he called me Shorty. I was taller than him. But he had a gang jacket on. And you know, back then, a gang jacket meant something, Cap.
Yeah, man.
It meant he could beat me. meant that he got a bunch of homeboys. I was a little, you know, he was older than me, but he was just small. And I was like, oh, my God. And, but you know the one thing? I'm going to even tell you, man, I'm going to keep it real with you because he let me, you know, this was back then when the neighborhood store used to sell the little, what's the name, the little shakes. You remember the homemade milkshake? You ever had the homemade milkshakes back in the days that they used to make from the fountains? Do you remember those milkshakes?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I had. You know, they gave me, you know, I was getting a homemade milkshake. My mom gave me a crispy purple $5 food stamp. It was purple. And she said, don't let nobody see it. When I was young, you know, I was like happy just to be even going outside. So I was running. I was like, give me this shake. Had that joint right in my hand. Camacho, now this store used to be on 110th Street in the train station. The train stayed, the Uptown train on Lexington Avenue. And it was, you know, it was the stationery. Camacho standing right in front of the stationery. He seen that $5 food stamp from the minute I crossed the street. And you know the people in the store are so messed up, they ain't even stop him from robbing me.
Hey, Big Stu.
Huh?
It's quarter after, man.
Oh, yeah, man, I didn't tell you that I was keeping you on a little extra.
Yo, what's next? You're going to be extra in my check?
I didn't let you know that. No, because, you know, things are going to be new. You know, I just wanted us to really tell people because everything is about ready to change with Beef Stew Radio come, you know, next week.
Yeah, man.
Taste of Hip Hop Cooking will be on 3 days a week for an hour show.
There you go.
Your show is coming to life.
Yeah, man.
We have another show that's going down on Saturdays, right? I'm presuming.
Yeah.
And do you want to tell them about that or you want to surprise them?
We're going to have to surprise them.
You know, just give them a little taste of what it could be. Or just tell them what it's going to be about.
It's going to be about...
Keywords?
Nah, we just got to spring it on them, man, when the time comes.
And then also, yours truly will be DJing every night. I will be mixing music every night now, Cap, 7 days a week.
Hmm. Yeah,
I'm actually about ready to play some music tonight. See, I had you on the show. I surprised Cap. I didn't let him know he's working overtime, y'all. Because he got all type of stuff. Because I want y'all to know, Cap would do much more than just co-host with me. You know, he's co-founder, co-owner. He does every technical thing here for us at Beef Stew Radio. He got like 17 hats.
Yeah,
I wonder if he have a little, you know, I don't even want to say it because it sounds.
No, I don't say it.
You know, it sounds wrong. I'm not even going to say it. But you know what, Cap? I'm going to play some music, though.
All right. That's what's up.
Yeah. This is the second half of the show. You're listening to Beef Stew Radio. We're doing the Overtime Mondays, me and the Capper. I got him working overtime.
Yeah, I'm waiting for a little extra on my check.
I bet you're wondering how I knew. Baby, 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 about your plans to make me blue. With some other girl you knew before. Between the two of us, girl, you know I love you more. It took me by surprise, I must say.
Big truck. He had to run downstairs and make sure that his German joint don't get hooked, you know, don't get no ticket on it. But, you know, I'm out here doing my remixes. This is the Hot Stepper remix. I don't know. I'm thinking about ready to get up out of here. You know what I'm saying? I'm going a little extra past my time. Like I said, doing a little overtime. There's Big Stu in the building. You know, it is now exactly 12:27. You know, I've been on longer than what I supposed to have been on. But next week, I'm going to start being on at this time for 2 hours a day anyway, extra, doing different mixes. So I just wanted to let y'all know that, you know what I'm saying, Taste the Hip Hop Cooking will be on every Sundays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, 11 o'clock to 12 p.m. It's going to be real nice. Then I come on from 12 p.m. till 2 p.m., playing different mixes up to the AM. So that's how we're going to do it on those days. And on the other days, I don't know the times that I'm going to be on, but I will be on 7 days a week. But just to let you know, I'm going to be on right after Taste of Hip Hop Cooking. Right after they go off, I come right on with Tasty Tuesdays, Sunday Soul, and across 110th Street Wednesdays. So, you know, across 110th Street Wednesdays, just to show y'all, it's like, gonna be a show where I take it back to like the rooftop music and back in the 80s we used to be skating. All that good music, you know, that used to make you feel like you was chilling, you know? That good soul and all that. So, you know, that's what I'm doing. And Mondays will also, we're gonna have the definitely Tasty Tuesdays, and we're gonna have the dance party Fridays right after Ladies Night with Keisha Cole. I mean, Kay Nicole. Once you do your thing with Kay Nicole after Ladies Night, then you're gonna come on with me and I'm gonna give you the Friday night dance party on Beast Street Radio. So I just want everybody to know that, you know what I'm saying? I'm gonna play a little bit more remixes, man, and I'm gonna get up out of here, man, because I'm a little tired, man. But I'm just letting y'all know this is what we're doing. We're blowing up Beast Street Radio. We are the number one internet radio station coming out of Harlem, baby. It's a fact. Can't. Listening to Beef Stew Radio, your man DJ Big Stew. You're listening to exclusive DJ Big Stew remixes. Check it out.
I'll be there to come.
Boys of Harlem, shout out to Luby D, Ted Smooth, shout out to Together We Chill Basketball Tournament in East Harlem.
Right, Superman.
We be coming.
I just want to say it's about time for me to get up out of here, y'all. Just played a little bit of what's going to be getting played on my remix show. You know what I'm saying? Once again, make sure you check us out every Mondays for the Monday Night Talk. And then after the Monday Night Talk, I will be on the, you know, Throwback Mondays. And then Tuesdays will be Taste of Hip Hop Cooking. And after that, I will be rocking Tasty Tuesdays. And then on Wednesdays would also be Taste of Hip Hop Cooking. And also the Kappa will bring have his show on there. After that, it will be all three of us, actually. It will be the Kappa, Taste Hip Hop Cooking, then also me rocking for 1 hour a day on the, you know, on Wednesdays. And then Thursdays, I come back again here 3 hours straight through me on a Thursday night show. And then Friday is K Nicole Ladies Night. And, you know, then it's me on a on Friday Night Dance Mix. Then it's me once again kicking it hard with you for the Uptown Saturday Night Party Live, when I just be throwing all type of old school, new school, new school, old school, new school, middle school, whatever it is, just throwing down some hot joints for y'all. You know what I'm saying? That's what's going to happen that day. So I just want to tell everybody, thank you for tuning in to Beef Stew Radio and helping us blow up and helping us be in the number one show in Harlem.
This pot smells delicious. Yeah, baby. And it's the base for our ultimate